Hello and welcome to A-Team Group's podcast on SEC Rule 606, brought to you from our Trading Tech Summit in New York City on the 11th of June 2019. The podcast includes a panel discussion detailing the requirements of Rule 606 for brokers to provide granular order routing details and considers the implications of this for both sell-side and buy-side firms. Listen to the podcast to find out more about Rule 606 from our expert panel.
So 606, right? If you thought 606 was not important before, you were correct, because 606 is posted out there on the broker-dealer websites. People don't look at it, and even when it's incorrect, no one's ever gotten in trouble for it. I've met with broker-dealers and said it's incorrect, they'll say, who cares? The new one, people are going to have to care about. SEC rule came into effect, amendment last November 2nd, May implementation. The May implementation has been moved until October 1st. And it's really very serious. And a lot of us have met with the SEC, and they're very serious. And it's all about transparency. And they're really clear that they want the transparency from the broker-dealer. And we're going to give you a chance to start. But you know what we're going to do? We're going to start with a vote first, right? And while we're doing the vote, I'm just going to ask everyone just to briefly, everybody on the panel, just give your name and company and what your role is at the company. So can we start the audience poll? All right, so if you guys can vote on that. And okay, Venu, just maybe start on who you are.
Sure. I'm Venu Palaparthi. I'm the Chief Compliance Officer and Head of Regulatory Affairs at Dash Financial.
Enrico Cacciatore at Voya Financial. Voya Investment Management, Senior Quantitative Trader and Head of Market Structure and Trading Analytics.
And I'm Jack Miller. I'm the Head of Equity Trading at Baird. Baird is a broker-dealer based out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We happen to be celebrating our 100th anniversary this week.
Yeah, how many firms can say that, right? You know, and this you know, he was laughing right about when I started. I mean, my first accounts were E.F. Hutton, Reynolds Securities, Loeb Rhodes, right? A.G. Becker, if anyone ever heard of all four of those, you'd do well on the test here. All right, so let's see. How ready is your organization to meet the 606? Somewhat ready, 43%. That's interesting. In the planning stage, 43%. Ready, whoever said ready, I'd like to talk to you afterward. I don't think you're ready. I just don't see how you could be ready for 606. But that's okay. You got to fill in something on the whole scheme of things. So why don't we start off by giving an explanation of the objectives of 606? What's it trying to achieve? Venu?
Sure. So I'll start with the obligatory name joke. So my name is Venu. I'm all about venue choice. Where you route your orders, what venues you choose is extremely important, and transparency surrounding it is what the 606 attempts to do. Unfortunately, through a mandate, a regulatory mandate, and what they did at the SEC is they took a rule that's about 18 years old, really ancient, kicked it, some rust came off of it, and now it's kind of this shiny new rule, which goes some way, but not the entire distance. And so what does it do, really? It takes the old report, which required maybe 6 or 7 columns with respect to orders that were either market or limit, and then takes the non-directed orders, and it kind of asks you to disclose where you routed those to. The new report is vastly different. So it's more granular. It separates everything by, say, it's still a quarterly report if it's a public report, but it has to be by month. If the public report has to be by S&P 500, non-S&P 500, listed options, all three are separate headers. It expands the columns from like 6 to 13 on the public report, and from 0 to 23 on the non-public customer-specific report. And the customer-specific report is entirely new, right? It now requires, the 606 now requires you to take all your not held orders and provide a ton of granularity on, you know, economics, on whether or not you executed as principal, on whether or not you routed to another broker, and therefore these orders were further routable, information leakage, did you kind of take these orders and expose them as actionable IOIs? So there's a ton of granularity on not only conflicts, but also execution quality or metrics, such as, you know, did they execute at midpoint? Did they execute on the near side or the far side? So it's a lot more information. And that's in a nutshell what the 606 expects. Now, obviously, like everything SEC, there's a lot of information that we still don't have about the 606. So that's hopefully something we'll cover.
Okay. Enrico, what are the implications for the buy side?
Obviously, like Vinod mentioned, it's 20-year-old adoption that where you had to change to 2016. I know there was an attempt to modify and update 606 rules. So we have to embrace that there is some change and we're moving in the right direction. I kind of equate it to looking at an abstract painting versus realist. I think from a venue analysis standpoint, you can get some idea, you can see what color it is, right? And some people might interpret it differently like an abstract painting, but you don't really get a true intention, right? I mean, we were just discussing timestamps. I know the initial was at the second with a half second rounding. I think now you said recently it's down to the milliseconds. And then we just heard Corville talking in nanoseconds where we could eventually, you know, get to the picosecond, right? So having that granularity is not there. Also, you know, we'll discuss later, you lose any intention, right? So when there's 21 different statistical matrix, statistics that you're looking at in here. And a lot of it's about fill rates, average order sizes, which I think is important, but where you routed conditional IOIs to, so exposed to those orders, I think those are of value. Also, I think of extreme importance, and also is if you have any, you have to disclose if you have any sort of relationship with any of these entities, right? So you have to do that. You know, it kind of aligns itself with Reg ATSN as well. So I think those are where the true value. But from a pure data analytics perspective, again, you get sort of a color of what's going on. You can create a conversation, but you can't really use it to interpret performance. And that's sort of my view.
Okay. Jack, what does it mean for the sell side?
Yeah, to echo a number of things that have been stated already, you know, really thematically, 606 is about transparency. And if you kind of step back, whether there's a 606 or not, as a sell side firm, we are being put under increased scrutiny by our clients to be more transparent about exactly what we're doing with orders. So whether there's a requirement from the regulators or not, this is something that we've seen change materially over the last couple of years. And to Enrico's point, even the way that 606 is written right now doesn't even take it as far as some of the conversations we're having with some of our more sophisticated clients about what's going on, and whether that's the content of the information and the accuracy of timestamps, things of that nature. That said, it's an incredibly important first step. So, Tom, you made this point right off the bat. As it's written right now, 606 is basically not relevant to an institutional audience, and so the fact that we're dealing kind of without a regulatory regime that requires much, if any, disclosure, this is a pretty big step forward, but it's just the start in terms of how this conversation is going to continue to evolve.
Okay. In terms of what's left to be done, and I sort of kidded about whoever said they were ready, and a lot of things that are still outstanding that we don't have the answers to, right? Let's give our audience some examples of some of the information we really need, because it has to be consistent. You know what I mean? You want all the sell side firms to be interpreting it the same, because the buy side can ask the sell side firms, and it's not really going to be that helpful if they interpret it differently. So what are some of the questions that are left that have to be answered? Anybody?
Well, like I stated, is the intention. When you route an order, what was the intention? Why did you route to that venue? Then once you have that intention, now you can start to parse all across your brokers by strategy, by intention. What was your experience when you went to BATS and you went far side, right? Now you go, you know, you use like a Corville and say, okay, statistically, what was my fill rate when I went to take the offer at BATS across all my brokers, all right? When I went midpoint ping in a IS medium strategy, what was my experience? What was my fill rates? What was my latency? I can do all these attributions once I have intention. Like Infinera stated when they started saying, hey, when you preference your own ATS, performance seems to be suboptimal. Well, again, they don't have, was that a directed order? I don't know. What was the intention? I don't know, right? So you can do a lot of inference from it, but unless you have the full understanding of why you went to that venue, what were you trying to do, it's of little value in my opinion.
So on readiness, the rule was, you know, it left out some key guidance, right? As an example, I mean, we are an algo provider and a broker. So we have direct relationships with our customers. They choose an algo, and we already, Dash Financial, already provides real-time transparency with respect to each route, each wave, right? Every wave, we are able to provide information to you. 606 expects that for the first hop. But what if the first broker dealer that had the relationship with the customer then took that order and passed it to Dash Financial? That is where 606 currently, you know, is awaiting greater clarity, because the rule currently expects only the first level broker to provide that information to their customer and leaves it to the market forces to figure out whether or not the second level broker wants to provide any information to help the first level broker. And that is, you know, when we spoke to the SEC, this concept of look through, you know, was kind of clarified, but we're waiting for real clarity on this issue. This particular issue is what will help Voya, for example, get clarity when the order went from them to, you know, another broker to a second broker. That is where I think we are lacking. That is the biggest issue, right? In connection with that, you know, what the adopting release says is, if you are the broker-dealer and you picked an algorithm provided by another broker-dealer, you selected the algorithm, then you had discretion, and therefore you have to provide additional information with respect to how that order was handled. But discretion was not clearly defined with respect to what does that mean? Is this like a fairly dumb algo, or is it a smart algo where it's parameterizable, where, you know, there's data that you don't have with respect to how child slices were generated? That to me is a big issue. There are also structural issues with the report. Obviously, the schema was incorrect in one or two areas. So there are like content issues, structure issues, and we're waiting for FAQs. We were told these were coming out imminently, like about a week ago. In fact, on our prep calls, we were like thinking maybe it'll be out by today, and it's still not out. So the 14% that think they are ready, you probably won't be so ready once the FAQs come out.
Yeah. And that's interesting, the part that he talked about in terms of the route, you know, and it goes from an IB, it goes to a Dash, and it goes some other place, right? The IB is the one that has the obligation to provide the report, right? And the one that they firmly routed to doesn't have the obligation. And when you ask the SEC, well, you know, if they decide not to provide that information, they'll say, well, you have to use your commercial persuasion. you know, which takes a little bit of time to do per se, because you're not going to switch. I mean, suppose Dash decide to do it. You're not going to switch out of Dash too quickly. It's going to take a while. So I think that's one of the huge issues for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Jack, we talked about it a little bit before, right? And, you know, maybe people want to get this done, right? And maybe there are simplistic ways of doing something that's better than today, but not the overall complexity. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think that comes down to this overall question of readiness. And as was just discussed, you know, we were kind of joking on the prep calls for this that, you know, hey, we need the guidance. We'll probably have the guidance in a couple of weeks. I mean, that guidance is going to drive the question whether this October date is really feasible for the vast majority of market participants or not. And we're kind of getting to that point where whatever the guidance is, there's a shrinking window to actually deal with that. I agree 100% that this look-through question is the biggest question, certainly to me, in terms of the missing clarifying guidance from the regulators, because that is the difference in my mind between this is a fairly, you know, perfunctory exercise that provides limited value to the ultimate consumers to something that can at least paint that abstract painting that Enrico talked about. The IOI question is another one, maybe not quite as pressing as the look-through question in my mind, but I think, you know, the definition of what qualifies as actionable is important. And so there's a number of things that, you know, we really need some guidance in order to determine, you know, what is the expectation.
Yeah, like the IOI one, right, is in terms of, you know, where is the market at that point in time? In the old 606, it didn't really matter what the market was, so you didn't even have to have market data. And now you have to have market data because you have to talk about where you stand in terms of the bid and offer. So it's really... The 606 B3 is where any buy-side firm can say to a sell-side firm, can you send me this report? And that's where all the complexity is from that point of view. Jack, what's your expectation on that? Do you expect a lot of your clients to be asking you for those reports?
That is a great question. I have asked myself that question many times. I think a couple ways to answer it. Yes, I do, simply for the reason that when we pass this date, I think that our clients will be getting advice that they should ask for the report, and I think that they will. I think the question is, what will they do with that report? Even in the limited form, you know, that it kind of exists now, it's a lot of data to process. And I think one of the limiting factors where we see clients that aren't engaging in this conversation right now is less about their desire to do so and more about just not having the resources or the bandwidth to, you know, really engage at that level. And that is not going to change once we pass a compliance date for 606. I think it's also an open question whether, and this gets to some of Enrico's comments, does the 606 report really become the foundation of a real conversation, around transparency and order routing, or does something else supersede or enrich that? And I could see this evolving in a way where the 606 report does become, you know, more or less, this is the exercise that we go through to evidence transparency, but the real conversation is happening somewhere else, TBD. And I think that is also tied together with this question about the guidance and ultimately what's going to be included in those reports.
Enrico, do you think that that's the case? Do you agree with that? That it can become the template, if you would, for the conversation between the buy side and the sell side? You're in a little bit of a different situation in that, you know, you're a big investment manager, so the big investment managers get a lot of information from the sell side, you know, that the small don't get, right? So you have that experience, but do you think it can become a template for a discussion?
No, I don't think so. I mean, to the point of we've already requested from all our brokers, we're already saying when it comes out, we want it already, right? To the point where I said, I see limited value of it. We're not going to try to build anything internal ourselves. We're going to use a third party that's already ready to go, you know, obviously based on future updates, to outsource that at a minimal cost to us, because we have it, we can look at it. We look at more of a compliance aspect and less of a trading aspect. So it's from a compliance perspective, we sort of, from my personal view, try to hand that off to compliance and let them use that. But from a trading and performance perspective, I see little value. Not only because of the granularity, but as a firm that trades globally, this is U.S. centric, so it does very little to our global funds, right? So we can only parse the U.S. piece, and what does it do to the rest of our not only asset classes, but our, you know, other countries we trade, right? So where I proposed in my initiative is using leveraging FIX, which is used globally and also multi-asset as well as the to facilitate this, right? So I think to answer your question, I think if you're not able to process right now tag 29, 851, tag 30 already, looking at this, you probably don't have people that are qualified to understand that, and you're going to have to outsource it to somebody, a third party. So that's sort of my view from it.
Just to put another plug in for FIX, the FIX protocol organization is working very closely on this, and like you mentioned, tag 851, and they've had to add more tags for liquidity, for example, you know, because it's adding liquidity, removing liquidity, but then there's ATSs now that are neither, so they're adding that. So it's trying to be a coordinated effort on the whole thing. But don't you think you're going to get more information about where stuff's routed? You know, I mean, even what you call a zero routes on the whole scheme of things. I mean, doesn't the buy side want to know not just where something's executed, but where's it routed?
We already get that.
Okay.
We already get that.
If the route is not executed, if it's not executed?
Yeah, we'll get a quarterly report from our brokers. But, you know, we did that for a while. We've had that for a few years. But, again, it just kind of gives you a little approximation of what's going on. From a compliance perspective, we can say, okay, one of the things we found, you could see a few years ago, is like, okay, we brought on a new broker, and we could easily see that they were using a cost plus model, right, for certain strategies. So you could just see that from the fills and from the zero routes, right? So the little things like that, it can help you, but again, it provides a basic forensics, and again, an abstract painting, you can see, okay, yeah, it's, you know, it gives you some idea, but it doesn't really give you, okay, all right, parent level performance was X, and I attribute that performance based on these routes. You can't really do that. It just gives you an overall landscape of what's going on. So it's very limited.
One of the focuses of the SEC is, again, the transparency, and part of it is like the payment for order flow, right? And they initiated the transaction fee pilot, which is now frozen because of the lawsuits, right? But do you think that the payments will be able to be passed back, Venu, when you look at the flows of how things work? What do you think? Is that going to be able to be usable to the buy side in terms of the payment?
Yeah. Again, it comes down to, well, first of all, usability-wise, right? The industry is at a different point of sophistication than the regulatory mandate, right? So we do provide your rebates, your fees on every wave in real time or near time. So that's the Dash Financial view of the world. But the regulatory view of the world does not assume that everyone has that kind of access. And so what does the 606 require? The 606 requires, on a monthly basis, you know, at the end of each quarter, what was the payment with respect to any orders or any shares that were routed, or what was the fees that were paid or rebates that were received in cents per share. So that's, you know, it's a very high level aggregated number. I think it works well for folks who don't have the level of access to data that that Voya has. Now, from our perspective, well, you know, can you not have that data if you have the capacity to process the data in real time or on an order by order level? And there are two impediments. One is, well, if you are a direct customer, we can give it all to you, either order by order level, you know, or aggregated in 606 format or Dash 360 format. But what about if you don't, if you're one step removed from us? That's where everything breaks down, because the 606 asks the customer to obtain and entitles the customer to obtain rebate and fee information as it applies to the introducing broker, not to the executing broker. So there's a gap there.
Huge gap. Okay, could the panel discuss, expand upon how they are handling capturing certain economics related to 606? Example, rebate, rate card data. It's a challenge, right? But does anyone want to take that?
Which one are we talking about? The first one here?
The bottom one.
Oh, the bottom one.
Could the how are you going to do it? Because I mean, the way and this is coming to the SEC. We're going to have to get them to agree to. The way it works is that the information is provided back in most cases to the asset managers at the end of the month, right? Because these are tables. Jack, I assume you have tables at your company that, you know, in terms of the fees that you get from the exchanges, and you provide them back on a at the end of the month basis or something like that?
Yeah, so our approach to this question is essentially a big lookup table. So this will take the essentially your Tag 30 and 851 data and match that up to a specific fee or rebate. There is some, you know, there are some rough edges around that where there could be tiering questions. I mean, I think this is one of the things that we need a little bit of just, I don't know if it's so much clarity, but safe harbor to make our best guess of what that would be, because that's not necessarily knowable at the time of trade, what the, you know, what ultimately that typically that rebate will be, just based on where we fall from a tier standpoint. But that's essentially it. And that's something that, at least from that perspective, is that is applicable to the look through paradigm as well, because as long as you're getting those tags, you can come up with a reasonable approximation. I guess the question is that approximation sufficient for compliance?
And Jack, I think that's the right word, is approximation. And I think the SEC has agreed to that. You know, you have to approximate, you know, best your information that you have on the whole thing, because you know, it's going to be in steps, right? And you know, the first step. And I think if you can approximate the information, they seem to be okay with that.
I think it's the broad strokes we're looking for. It's, you know, is there evidence of fee-based routing, basically? Is there evidence of, you know, a conflict, you know, where it's clear that something is being done that's not in the best interest of best execution? And for those purposes, that approximation likely captures it, although excellent point raised about without the context of what was the intent of either that strategy or that individual child order, you are missing a key piece of information. And I think this is a tough conversation to have, is that, you know, it's easy to say, I've heard this argued, hey, rebate equals bad because the only reason you're doing that is to capture the rebate. Well, that is not the only reason why I might route in a way that may generate a rebate. Is that consequential to what we did, or was it the reason? That's harder to show.
And you know, and I think there's this, the SEC has this fixation, and I think there's a lot of my peers have this fixation on the access fee. And if you look at 606, it's really honing in on, is there this, you know, is there a conflict of interest? Because if you look at, of the 21 stats, you know, over half of them are relate to some fee-based structure, right? If you look at the transaction fee pilot, same thing, it's honing in on access fee. I think we really need to focus our energy. And again, I want to caveat that I think 606 is going the right direction. There is some value to it because it does provide some, you know, information. but I don't think we go far enough, and we have to look out in the future 5-10 years from now. Again, it's been 20 years since it's been updated, so we got to kind of seize the moment right now. We have an SEC that very open ear, you know, they're listening, they're cut from the same cloth within this industry, so they're open to suggestions, so we want to seize upon that. But again, we need to really focus in on intention and an understanding of the order types, and also the other perspective, and I think we have to look at is whether it's tick sizes and access fees, it's associated with what type of security we're trading, right? Is it, you know, very liquid tight spreads, or is it very illiquid large spreads, right? And I think we can work with an adaptable tick and access fee that could improve that process. So I think that's what we got to look at. Whereas the transaction fee pilot in 606 is purely focused on economics of the access fee is bad. Therefore, we want to prove that it's bad, right? So I think the premise is going at it wrong, and we have to be more open to looking at situations where maybe, you know, a rebate that's a penny in a 5-cent spread wide tick is good, that can produce more liquidity within these low liquidity names. So I think that's the way we want to approach it.
One more question.
I'm curious, when I was responsible for some of this reporting, I think it was like 106 when they changed the numbering. There are a number of service providers that do a lot of the normalization data reporting for certainly sell-side firms. And I'm wondering, one, do you see that continuing where it's just going to be delegated to a couple of specialist firms that get the data right? And then more interestingly, do you think that once this greater data set is published, do you think there'll be aggregation services to provide data to market participants about performance? In other words, repurposing the data in a meaningful way, kind of like holdings data has been used for decades.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's one of the ones we had on the list, because we talked to people about 606 and said, and their answer is my reporting vendor is going to worry about that, right? So can firms just sit back and just say, you know, the person doing my 606 reporting will take care of this?
I think, yeah, that kind of a laid-back approach may not work here. the reason for that is that we don't have a relationship with the vendor. We have a relationship with the customer. So if the customer tells us, hey, you know, if you want our order flow, we expect you to provide the data in either aggregated or disaggregated form to our vendor, and then we could probably work out an arrangement to do that. And once the vendors have that data, we are going to obviously try and make sure that it's not used for some spin-off business. So it's specifically targeted. This information is for customer use, not for, you know, for the vendor to then transform into, you know, some additional packaged data.
All right. I said there was one more question. I'm just going to take one more because Jack recently wrote a paper. He didn't write a paper. He was quoted in a paper on this, and I think it's pretty important, right? Doubt the SEC will clarify the mandate for pass-through. Market forces will, however, necessitate it. Do you agree?
I do.
So you think it'll...
Short answer. I think, in the open question whether that applies to the actual mechanism of producing a 606B3 report, but market forces will and already do necessitate a deeper level of transparency that goes beyond the first intermediate hop.
Thank you for listening to our podcast on SEC Rule 606. We hope you found it useful. For more content and comment on trading technology from A-Team Group, visit our website at ateaminsight.com.